Hi, everybody. Wow. It's almost like a wedding. I'm Karen, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank you all for inviting me here to speak tonight. It's a pleasure to be here. I want to blow some stuff out of the way first. Just for me, anybody with under a year, can you raise your hand? Under a year. Hi. I need to see you. Okay, great. Okay, perfect. My sobriety date is September the 8th, 1988, and I got sober on the Upper West Side of Manhattan in a group called First Things First on 96th Street and Broadway. They slip me a 20 every time I speak to let you know they have four meetings every morning at 6 o'clock, 7:15, 8:45, and 10 o'clock. I still go to that meeting every morning on Zoom. I'm also a member of the Spiritual Principles group on Sunday, and I'm also a member here in Florida of the Happy Hour group at St. Benedict's in Plantation. So I moved here about 4 months ago, so I'm fairly new to the area, and I'm definitely the shiny new thing. There's no question about it. But I'm very glad to be here. I'm also glad that you don't read in your thing that lack of profanity offends no one, because every time they say that, you have no idea what goes on in my head and what I want to say back to the person that's saying that. Anyway, I'm so delighted to be here. I've just returned from New York. I go home for the holidays because I love New York at Christmas. I mean, I just love it. I love the lights. You know, I'm an alcoholic that like those shiny cut glasses. I like shiny things. And I get to go home. I still sponsor a lot of people in New York. And we have a great time. We had sober dinners. And one of my sponsees made a big sponsee meeting dinner for us. And lots of things happen. But one thing that I do all the time, I make this time for myself, all by myself, is I go to Fifth Avenue in the middle of Christmas shopping. This is like a couple of days before Christmas, but it's absolutely packed. I mean, nobody in their right mind who's not a tourist goes on Fifth Avenue a couple days before Christmas, but I go and walk, and I like being pushed around, and I like yelling at people, and I like them yelling at me, and it's freezing, it's 12 degrees out, and I'm pushing and shoving and going in the stores, and you know, I'm waiting for my Mecca, which is Saks Fifth Avenue, to like appear, and the lights are beautiful. Anyway, I got hungry as I'm pushing around the place, and I decided to ask the guy on the street, you know, who makes the pretzels. I really wanted a pretzel. So I said to him, do you have an unsalted one? And he looked at me, he goes, sure. And he takes the pretzel and he goes like this. And he wipes it out, he goes, here's your pretzel. I pay $5 for this pretzel. He gives it to me. I take two bites of it. It's so disgusting that it's New York. And there's, of course, a woman lying on the ground with her baby. And I give her the pretzel and I walk away. And as I walk away, I stop because I always know that this is going to happen to me. I stop and I begin to cry. And, you know, it's a good thing it's New York. They don't care who's crying on the street. They don't ask you what's wrong. They just push past you. You're just blocking their way. And I'm crying on the street because I remember that 40 years ago, I was on the streets of Manhattan, walking the streets, dressed in filthy clothes, eating out of garbage cans. And I think to myself, look what's happened in the last 40 years. It's unimaginable to me. You know, a very good friend of mine in AA says, you know, we're overpaid to be here. And, you know, and that's how I feel about it. Anyway, I came home and I'm, you know, glad to be back. I went down. I got sick for a while with whatever crud is going around and I'm still partially deaf from it. So blah, 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 blah. Thank you to Colette. That's on tape now. Who's been filling in for me when I can't show up, but I desperately wanted to be here tonight. Anyway, when I was in New York, I saw my friend Fat Judy. I love Fat Judy. Fat Judy's in AA. She's no longer fat. She was fat when I knew her. She was 400 pounds. Now she got some kind of operation and she's regular size, I guess. But, you know, one of my last drunks was with Fat Judy. I'd love to get drunk with Fat Judy. And Judy and I decided one day that we figured out that we were not going to be, we didn't have the cool factor for when we got old. And so we figured out that we wanted to go and get tattoos. So when we died, we were like old ladies. You know, they would say, oh, look how cool they were because they had tattoos. This is before we had no idea what was going to happen with tattoos from then till now. And tattoos, it's so long ago that tattoos were illegal in New York. And so we had to take the train to Yonkers. There's literally no other reason to go to Yonkers. We get on the train, we go to Yonkers. Judy couldn't get a babysitter, so our cool factor went down again because she's got this kid in the stroller. And we get out in Yonkers and we go to the tattoo, and we go to the bar first, actually, because that's a prerequisite. We go to the bar, we drink, and we go back, and we go to the tattoo parlor, and there's a big sign there that says, you know, we won't serve you if you've been served like that. So we turn around and we go back to the bar because we're not drunk enough to get in. So we drink more, we get in there, and the guy turns around and he says, what are you looking for? And I said, I'd like something delicate. And Judy goes, no, she wants something big. I said, no, something delicate, and we're drunk. And the guy turns around and he puts on a white coat like he's a doctor. And that is the last thing I remember. That's all I know. I have always been grateful for being a blackout drinker. Always. You know, I wake up in places I don't know how I got there. I wake up in places I don't know who's next to me. I love the fact that I don't have to take responsibility for how I got to that point. I can take it from the moment I wake up and then we move forward. I wake up and I'm knocking on my own apartment door in Manhattan because I can't find my keys. And my husband at the time, and I've been married 5 times, so my phrase is always my husband at the time. My husband at the time opens up the door, and I can see over his shoulder that he's got all these people sitting around the like dining room table, and he's literally hosting, or we're hosting, a dinner party. And he has this look on his face like, oh my God, like total disgust. I make a left, I jet into the bathroom, I take a look in the mirror, and I realize there's a slight problem. I have a black eye, my makeup has run down my face, the front of my shirt is bloody, and I'm missing my front tooth. So, you know, but for me, it's no problem. And I also, you know, never really thought that this was associated with drinking. And so I took a shower, because at that time in my drinking, I was drinking in the shower. So when you drink in the shower, you have everything you need in the bathroom to drink in the shower, get out, get dressed, and leave. And nobody knows you're drinking in the shower. And so I did that. I cleaned up. I looked down. I realized that I had something here, you know, that was bloody. And I looked down. It was a teeny tiny rose. And I thought, well, that will be very, very cool when I get old, except now it's a long stem rose and it's not so cool. It was better before. Anyway, I look in the mirror, I put on more makeup, I reach in my pocket, my tooth is in my pocket, I'm very grateful for that. I open up the cabinet, I take out the crazy glue, I glue that sucker right back into my mouth, and I go, I'm good to go, and I go and sit down and have dinner with these people from Vogue magazine. That marriage ended shortly after that. When I was 18 months before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, we were down in Florida, actually. We were at my parents' house in Tamarack. My husband, who was my son's father, I'd had a baby. And, it was New Year's Eve. And I had one of those moments, they call those moments of clarity, when I looked into the mirror and I didn't recognize who I was. I was about 370 pounds. I was drunk. I was high. I was having a situation. And I didn't know how to stop. And I looked in the mirror and I literally said, you know, God, I'll do anything if you make me stop, anything at all. But you have to make me stop because I can't stop. And then I did the thing that you should never do. And I said, and I'd like a sign. And there was all of a sudden there was a tingling in my mouth. And I went, oh my God, that's a sign. So we go out that night and they put a Jack Daniels in front of me because that was my drink of choice. If you drank anything less than Jack Daniels, you were just weak. And so they put the drink down in front. I went to go and drink it, and I get a tingling in my mouth. And I went, oh, my God, I've been saved. And then I remembered that I'm Jewish, and that's not going to happen. But every time the glass came, the tingling came. Put the glass down, came back in the house, and I thought, I'm never going to drink again. And I thought, really, that I had been saved. But I wasn't being saved. I woke up in the middle of the night with excruciating pain, and I stroked out all over the place. They took me to the hospital. The doctor said, you know, I don't understand this. You're so young. You know, do you abuse drugs? Do you abuse alcohol? I've never seen anything like this, and somebody is young at you. And I went, no, I'm a mother. I mean, that was my excuse. Came back to New York after that because I was sick and stayed sick for a long time. You know, if I had a year where I couldn't move, or I couldn't move that side of my body, I managed to get everything I needed up a straw. And at no time did I ever think any of this was connected to drugs and alcohol. Well, I want to push forward to tell you that if I hadn't had that situation happen to me, I never would have come into AA. I literally would have drunk myself to death. There was no question about that. And so when I decided to come into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was sitting with that husband on the streets on Broadway, having a drink, not a drink, just a drink, like iced tea. and he was having a drink, like a Long Island iced tea, and I was fixated on the bead of like water going down the side of his glass, you know, because it was early September, and fixated, and I heard a voice in my head that said, get up, you're going to die. And I have to tell you that that kind of a voice that says that to you in the past was very calming for me. It was very soothing for me. It was actually something that I had considered. And I thought, this is good, but not that day. That day I got up and I said, I got to go. And he said, where are you going? I said, I got to go. And I came back to my apartment and, you know, this is, sorry, I'm old. No computers, no cell phones, no nothing. But we did have the Yellow Pages. And in the Yellow Pages, AA in New York had paid $3 for a bold listing. And so I could find Alcoholics Anonymous. And I called them up and they said I was on 87th Street and I was on 87th Street and West End Avenue. And the meeting was on 96th Street. And so close, and I can walk. It took me 4 days to get to the meeting. I drank every single time I went to the meeting because it's New York and everything is open all the time. It took me 4 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I got into the meeting. I walked in. Somebody looked at me and he said, you look tired. Why don't you sit down? And I thought, how does he know? How does he know how tired I am? I'm not a drunk that came into AA with a nudge from the drug, from the judge, or you know, some kind of pressure from my family. I came in because I was absolutely exhausted. It is very hard to drink and then not drink, and then drink and then not drink. It's exhausting. So I decided to come into Alcoholics Anonymous without knowing anything at all about the program. I didn't know anybody who was sober. I saw people in Manhattan who used to stand outside of a church with a cup of coffee. I figured that must be an AA meeting. And I walked to this meeting. I used to take my son with me every day because I couldn't get a babysitter. And my third day in there, I didn't talk to anybody. My third day in there, I met a heroin addict who was trying to get clean. And I asked him to babysit. He said, yes. So I mean, things you don't remember. Anyway, maybe in my first 2 weeks, I was getting ready to go, and the baby was in the stroller, and he had his little teddy bear in his arms, and my husband came out of the bedroom with a big liter of Jack Daniels. And he put it, and he slammed it on the kitchen table, and he said, here, drink this and get nice. And he walked out, and he never came back, and he was gone. He never came back. So because we are in that kind of mocha state, and I have no idea how I am sober 2 weeks, I take the bottle of Jack Daniels, I take the teddy bear out of his arms, and I have my son hold the bottle of Jack Daniels, and we go strolling down Broadway to get to this meeting. And once again, I'm so grateful for being in New York, because nobody cares that this infant is holding a big liter of Jack Daniels going down Broadway. And I get to the meeting in there, and I stroll in there, and some old-timer took my baby. And I have to tell you, to this day, when I see women coming into this program with young children, I applaud them because it's hard. When I took my son with me for 8 years to AA, it's hard. And when I hear other people complaining, I'm very vocal because it's hard to get sober and harder with a kid and even harder with a kid by yourself. So they took that kid. And they took him every single day. And I went in the back of the room, and I had a baseball hat on and sunglasses on, and I'm really going to date myself, and a Walkman. Remember the Walkman? And I had the Walkman turned on to 10, listening to the Pointer Sisters. Loud, loud, loud. And I would sit in the back of the room, and it was a guy sitting next to me. And I don't know, maybe my third week in there, whatever. He turns around, and he pokes me next to me to let me know like this. So I said, oh, it must be too loud. And then he winks at me, and I thought, well, no, this is not happening here. I am not here for that. I can get that out there. And so my language at the time was violence, because that's how I grew up. And I turned around and I punched him, because that's what I was told. And this poor man went right down on the ground. But I got to tell you, you know, my group, First Things First, was very much known as the Wild Wild West. Nobody blinked. Nobody said anything. Nobody said anything at all. The meeting didn't even stop. You know, this poor guy's on the floor next to me, and he gets up, and he brushes himself off, and he sits down. He leaves a seat between us, and he moves over one seat, and he sits down, and that's the end of it. And the end of the meeting comes, the chairperson comes up, and he says to me, Karen, welcome to AA. In AA, we keep our hands to ourselves. And I said, you know, you don't, but my case is different. You don't understand. This guy turned around, and he winked at me. He says, let me introduce you to Winky Don. He has a tick. He winks at everybody. And therein started my journey of pure tea love in AA. And I want to tell you something. 4 years later, I was the speaker in Manhattan at the meeting called the Big Meeting. There was like 2,500 people there. And I was excited about going and blah, 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 blah. The next thing I know, I see Winky Don is introducing me. And I'm like, oh, my God. And he introduces me as the middleweight champion of the Upper West Side. So shortly after I came in, I clearly wasn't 90 days sober, but in my group, they used to count days before your 90 days. And everybody would say, you know, my name is Sam and I have 15 days, clap, clap, clap. You know, my name is Susan and I have 40 days, clap, clap, clap. And that's what they would do. And I would never, ever share my time because, first of all, two things. Number one, it wasn't any of your business. And number two, I didn't really have any time to share. You know, low, low, low numbers. Anyway, one day I come into the meeting and they're counting days and everyone's clapping and a guy stands up and he goes, my name is Tom and she has 88 days. And that was the second time I realized that you were going to love me back to health. And so I got up to get my 90-day coins. In those days, you know, you got up, and how I was raised is you got a white chip and then you didn't get anything else until you got a bronze token that said 3 months. And that's the token that I went to get, and the guy shakes my hand, and I go to sit down, and he goes, where are you going? You're the speaker. So what are you talking about? He says, at 90 days in this meeting, you are the speaker. I said, I have nothing to say. I don't know what to do. He says, just do what Lloyd did last week. And I said, Lloyd? Lloyd got up there last week and said, my name is Lloyd. I'm an alcoholic. And then he cried for 20 minutes. And at the end of his talk, everybody gave him a standing ovation. I said, I can't do that. So I gave my first talk at 90 days, and I don't know what I said. But right after that, some well-meaning person came up and said to me, you're about to drink. And the reason I know you're going about to drink is because you don't have a sponsor. And the reason you don't have a sponsor is because women are afraid of you. So get yourself a good guy who's not afraid of you. And there was a guy in the room named Albert, and he was the opposite of everything I was. For one thing, he was quiet. And, you know, he was 10 years sober when I met him, and he had been to jail for trying to slit his wife's throat because he got pissed off at her. And I thought, I understand that kind of anger. I get that. And so I asked him to be my sponsor, and he said that he would. And he said, you have to call me every day, and we can start your day off with a conversation, and we'll take it from there. And I said, great. And I never picked up the phone. But it didn't seem to matter to him, because every single morning at 7 o'clock, my phone would ring. And this guy in his sing-song voice would say, hello, Karen, this is Albert. You know, what's going on today? And then I would, you know, talk. And I would tell him, you know, intimate things and where I was and blah, 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 blah. And for about 10 minutes. And after 10 minutes, he would just say to me, that's good. You sound good. You know, don't drink, don't drug, go to a meeting, and we will check in again tomorrow. So in Manhattan, in New York, first things first, we are such a big group. There's hundreds and hundreds of people that go. There's 56 meetings a week for this one group. It's a lot of people. We used to have a picnic every year in Central Park. And not only would you come, but you would bring your family and you would bring your sponsor and your sponsees. So it just quadrupled the amount of people that were there. And at the time, I was told that Albert, he told me actually, Albert sponsored 12 people at a clip at all times. Because when he was drunk, he fathered 12 children out of wedlock. And so he didn't know where any of them were. And so he sponsored 12 people at a time. So I'm at this picnic, and this girl comes up to me, and she said, are you number 12? And I said, yes, I'm number 12. She goes, I'm number 11. She goes, isn't Albert great? I said, Albert's, you know, he's unbelievable. First of all, there's no judgment. He listens to everything I say. He never judges me. He never interrupts me. He doesn't say anything at all. He just lets me talk, and then I get on with my day. And she said, you do know Albert's deaf. So I said, I don't understand. She said, that's how he sponsors 12 people. He calls you up, he takes his hearing aids out, he times his watch for 10 minutes, he lets you ramble on. After 10 minutes, he puts his hearing aids back in and says, have a nice day and go to a meeting. And that's how I've been loved in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I don't have a lot of time yet left. But I want to tell you a little bit about today, because I have literally been loved back into a lovely life in sobriety. We were sitting at the table for eating, and that lovely young man over there asked me what I did for a living, and I hesitated, and he says, it's not that complicated, and it is that complicated. You know, for lack of a better term, I'm a professional Jew. I don't know how else to put it, but that's who I am. And I have been doing this for about 15 years. And so I take people to Israel, and I take people all over the world to come, and I give a lot of public speaking, and I've done this for a very long time. And so you can imagine that the last year and a half of my life has been very, very difficult. Very, very difficult. And I'm a first-generation born American. I'm from a family of Holocaust survivors, and the last Holocaust survivor died yesterday. And so I'm very invested in this, very invested for people to love Israel, to go to Israel, to try to understand, you know, who we are. You know, consequently, I've had the honor, the unbelievable honor of speaking in Israel many, many, many times. As a matter of fact, I'm going back in May for the state conference, state the country conference, to speak there. And the last time that I was there, only in Israel, last time I was there, whatever day I was there, they stopped all the other meetings. They just didn't have them that day so that everybody could convene to come to this one big meeting to hear the girl from New York speak. You know, they were hungry for AA. I've had this extraordinary experience in my sober life of speaking all over the world, and I'm so grateful I can't see straight for all the opportunities I've been given. When COVID hit, those opportunities like quadrupled. It's just been unbelievable. There's somebody here tonight. Oh, there you are. You know, who's heard me? I am every year, I'm the country speaker for the country of Iran. You know, I'm the nice Jewish girl that's getting up there and telling them about God and telling them about serenity. And when you get into that Zoom room in Iran, every single box on there is black. There are no faces because alcohol is illegal in the country and they're afraid the police will come into the meeting and see them there. You are speaking to like page after page after page of black boxes. And last year I did it and they called. And by the way, I can only say four words at a time because it's all being translated into Farsi. And last year I was there and he said, you know, we're in trouble. We need you to do, you know, the steps. And I said, which one? He said, all of them. And so that's what we did for the country. You know, I've spoken behind the Iron Curtain, where I had, you know, more sobriety than AA had been alive in the country itself. It's really been an extraordinary journey for me. You know, I have I want to say this really quickly. In September, I turned 36 years sober. And on my fifth anniversary, my husband was killed. My third husband was killed. He was, you know, the love of my life, of course. And I had a huge spiritual experience that night he was killed. I don't know how that happens. I just know that it does. And I had it in the morgue in New York. And I literally breathed in God. And I don't know how to explain it. But I want to say this for the people under a year, to say for the first 5 years of my sobriety, I worked the program with no God. And on the fifth year of my sobriety, I not only found God, but God found me and pushed his way inside of me. And I breathed in God, and I've never been the same, ever. But I also feel that for me, it comes with a responsibility. And every time I get nervous, and I'm not an afraid person anymore, I just take that big breath in, and I breathe God in again, and everything's okay. And I don't know how else, you know, to put that. And so, you know, in today's world, yesterday was a stressful day. You know, they were releasing hostages. It was really stressful. Until we saw, we didn't believe. And my family is there, and my family here, and everybody's on WhatsApp, and blah, 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 blah. And not a thought of drinking occurs to me. Not a thought of using occurs to me. All I could think of was, be there for somebody if they need you. Be there for somebody who's not going to be able to make it through this. You know, so it's... There's a meeting that I went to in Israel a while ago. You know, I would take people to Israel to see the country. The feeling is if you see the country, you love the country. And it's true. Christians, Jews, everybody, when you go, it's just it's an extraordinary feeling. And so I was there with a bunch of people who were annoying me. I'm sorry, they were annoying me. And I had to find a meeting, and it was Saturday, and it's Shabbat, and the whole country shuts down on Saturday. And I kept calling intergroup and calling intergroup, and nobody would answer my phone because they don't answer the phone on Shabbat. Nobody can do anything. And finally, this girl answers the phone, and she's the Christian roommate of the girl from AA who is Jewish. And I tell her that I'm in a total panic, that I hate everybody that's here, that da 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 da, and I need a meeting. And she said, don't worry about it. We're going to send you a safe cab, and it's going to take you to a meeting. A safe cab for me is a cab that won't, you know, abduct me or do anything bad or whatever. And so I said, great. So they take the cab, and the cab comes for me, and it drives into this part of Jerusalem, and I know that I'm not supposed to be there. I know I'm in a bad part of town, and I'm not. And the cab driver is talking to me in Hebrew, which is Hebrew and English, and he says, are you sure this is where you want to go? And I said, yes. And so he lets me out, and there's nobody on the street because it's Shabbat, and he leaves, and I'm all by myself on this street for about a minute until I see this woman running down the street. She is clearly Arab. She is clearly Palestinian, and she is running down the street yelling, "Are you Karen the alcoholic?" That's me. So she comes to get me, takes my hand, and we go down the back alley, down the cobblestone stairs, and we find this synagogue in Israel. All the meetings are in synagogues. And we go into the synagogue all the way underneath, and I walk in, and I just couldn't believe what awaited me in the room. There were all kinds of people there. There were Orthodox Jews. There were Hasidic Jews. There were ultra-Orthodox Jews. I've never been in the same room with a male Orthodox Jew because it's not allowed. There were Palestinians. There were Arabs. There were Europeans. I was the only American in there, and people that don't speak to each other, that are not allowed to be in the same room, are all in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they do the whole meeting, and at the end of the meeting, the chairperson says, "Now we will all stand and hold hands and say the Serenity Prayer." And I thought, well, how is that going to happen? I mean, nobody can touch each other, much less anything else. And all the women in the meeting stood up, and they pulled a glove out of their hands. One glove and one glove. And the person next to them took the glove from the other side, and we made a huge circle. And I remember thinking, my God, I have discovered world peace. And it's anonymous. I can't tell anybody. Anyway, I have a prayer that I say around the holidays that's sort of been sitting with me as I've been thinking about, you know, how wonderful my life is now. And, you know, it's not just a gratitude prayer. It's a specific prayer that says, you know, thank you to God. Thank you for what you gave me. You know, thank you for what you took away. And thank you for what you left behind. And what I'm looking at is what was left behind. Thank you so much. It's been an honor to be here.